What's up, Bark After Dark?
Yeah, sorry, I'm over here tweeting out the link. Okay. We're a little bit live. We're a little bit early on the live.
Yeah, we are. We are about, 4 minutes early. We wanted to jump in early because the fish are a-biting over at Dogs HQ. In addition to it kind of being a little bit of a wild, weird, wacky day, decommitment, transfer portal might not be very far away from a commitment either at this point. I don't think we've been shy about reporting over at Dogs HQ. I know I have. Dylan Rayola very much kind of trending George's way, and sounds like something might be going down there a little sooner rather than later. What are you hearing?
Yeah, it's possible. I don't think anything's 100% done, anything like that. But the possibility certainly exists. And, goodness gracious, if that were to happen, and I get it, right? The timing seems right for something like this. Kirby has done a great job of sort of owning the news. Georgia today loses Landon Thomas in the class 2024, drops to number 2 in the class ranking. Barry Alexander, obviously, heads for the transfer portal over the weekend. Two highly rated guys, one already on the team and one in the class. Nothing will surprise me is what I will say about that. Like I said, I don't think anything's a done deal. And I've been very skeptical this whole time, primarily because I just got a lot of that Munson in me when it comes to things like this. USC has been a big factor. Nebraska has been a big factor. Georgia has been there throughout for Dylan Rayola. And, you've got your pick in on the RPM. I don't disagree with that right now. And I think you could be onto something.
Yeah, so I was told one of the things that I heard over this weekend was that the family, did out of courtesy, I think they did kind of give Nebraska a little bit of an extension, kind of reached the arm out and was like, hey, we'll shake your hand and kind of see what the handshake feels like. But I don't ever think Nebraska was ever really a big time contender. And I almost think that USC thus far, it's not over till it's over. USC kind of had a little bit of a, they surprised them a little bit, I think, and they impressed them a little bit. But Georgia has been, since the national championship game, it goes back to then. And I believe he told Chad Simmons at the time, it was like, hey, man, Georgia's just different.
Yeah.
The
Nebraska thing, to me it was like the main sell has always been like program savior, right? Like you come in, Nebraska – you could, if you're Dylan Rayola, you could sweep floors at Nebraska and people would pay for you to live in Lincoln for the rest of your life. It's that kind of setup. USC, always a compelling option because of Lincoln Riley and, what he's done with quarterbacks. They haven't won maybe on the highest level yet. I think that they can get there with what they do. But if you want to be a top guy in the NFL draft and you want to be a guy who's putting up numbers, USC makes all the sense in the world, in my opinion. But yeah, like you said, the feeling around Georgia has always been, Georgia's a little bit different. Georgia operates its program a little bit differently. There's I read a quote not long ago from his father Dominic Rayola, who said that you'd never know these guys are champions. They're starving. He said they're starving in practice, eating off the floor, as Palmer likes to say all the time. So I think it's, it's compelling. And like I said, don't count your chickens just yet. Could it happen soon? Sure. But I don't know that anything is locked, loaded, and done deal.
Well, I mean, I may have told this story on this show. Maybe I said it somewhere else, but I remember back in the day when Chuma Edoga was a 5-star offensive tackle, and Chuma just kind of sent me a text and said, "Hey, I got something for you later today." And, I knew what it was, and Georgia knew what it was, and I had it. And, man, I worked with at the time, a good friend of mine, Rusty Mantell, he had the same info. We were on the same team, and we were getting ready to break some big news. And, boy, we got left at the altar on that one.
Sure.
Foolish. And, Woody Womack, we won't talk too much about Woody on the show. I had some good times with Woody, I'll say that. He kind of did a victory lap around us on that one. I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying not to say anything mean, but that was he was mean.
Might get a call later.
Maybe.
I've had some good times with Woody too.
I have too, man. Me and Woody used to cover Rising Seniors together. It's a good time. He did tick me off that day, though. Maybe I deserve to be ticked off. Who knows? What are you drinking?
Tonight, nothing too crazy, man. A little standard one that everybody should be familiar with, Sweetwater 420, extra pale ale. Like the bitterness, man. Really do. I'm a hop forward guy, and so the hoppier the better for me. They make a great one, and they sell it at the local beer store, which is not too far from my house. So I gotta go support
the local beer store, Walmart.
No, the local beer store is. How dare you? How dare you bring that up? I told you that in confidence that I went to the Walmart today, and now you've betrayed my trust on Barcaster's part.
I bought some pot and soil from Walmart recently, so.
No, the local beer store here is Raymond's Curve, named for Raymond, a celebrity. Most people in this area bought their first beer from Raymond. He would sell it to you underage, I was always told, for double the price that it cost. he looked like Conway Twitty, man. He had these huge he had these big chops. And my dad bought his beer from Raymond, and I bought my beer from Raymond. He sadly passed, but Raymond's Curve still carries on. And shout out. What you sipping on tonight before we welcome our guests?
I got the ranch water, but with the Blanco tequila tonight. Instead of going with the Reposado, I went with the Blanco. It had been a while. I do love these ranch waters. They are very refreshing. So let's bring on my man, Seth Emerson. I love this guy.
There he is.
What's up, Seth?
I'm drinking. Am I allowed to say that, A, I'm drinking wine?
And yeah, absolutely.
B, that it's Trader Joe's wine.
A man who appreciates a good value is what I would say.
$2 chuck.
Yeah, it's like thanks to inflation, it's like $3.99 now. But you got to do it cheap during the week. Like I've told Jake, sometimes I feel proud of myself on weekends when I hit the trifecta, when you have that like 2 or 3 o'clock beer after being outside for a little bit, then you have a little wine with dinner, and then at night you just sip a bourbon. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
You hit the trifecta.
I feel like Seth looks like he's doing this from the other room in my house. If you look at the paint color, if you look at the paint color of the door, like
yeah.
But he's clearly in a basement. He's clearly,
I am. There's the guest room's over there. I'm in my basement, and hopefully this was in the Zoom era when we were doing all our interviews. Everyone worried about the backgrounds and everything. I didn't worry too much about my backgrounds to begin with. I definitely don't worry about it now. So that's why you've got the bland setup.
Well, Jake Roos typically has a microwave in the back.
that's where the food gets warmed right there. By the way, so.
that microwave's seen a lot of tiki masala over the years. Over the last couple of years. Well, Seth, thanks so much for joining us, man. And, you and I have been buddies for a long time. We've shared a lot of meals together on the road. We've shared a lot of laughs together on the road. One thing that I've never really delved into with you as a person is something we delve into with everybody on the show. And that's kind of like where you come from, what got you into this, where it all started. And I'm really actually interested to hear this, and I'll get to hear it for the first time, like a lot of folks will. What got you into this business? What got you into journalism, sports writing, all of that stuff?
Well, I think a lot of people know I'm not originally from around these parts. I'm from Maryland, but I spent like half my childhood in Silver Spring, Maryland, which is a suburb of DC, and the other half was in various countries because my dad was a diplomat. He's still sort of a diplomat, but he was. And so at age 18, I went to Maryland because I didn't really want to go far away after all this world travel and everything. I got into Syracuse, but I just wanted to stay home. Got rejected by North Carolina, so, you know, screw them. But I'm one of these unusual people who knew what I wanted to do. You guys may be in this boat too, where I knew what I wanted to do before college. And at the age of 47 now, I'm still, well, going to be 47 in next month. I'm still doing it. I went to college to study journalism, and I kept that major the whole way through. And I worked at a bunch of small newspapers and worked my way up. And I, despite all the odds, I'm still doing what I set out to do. And it's still fun for the most part. You guys know what the parts that aren't fun. It's been an interesting ride. I'm not sure I would have told you. I definitely wouldn't have told you years ago when I started this that I would be in the Deep South. We knew about college football, and college football was somewhat of a big deal, but it was the DC area. Like once you get to kind of Tobacco Road and north, that's college basketball. That's right. NFL. And so I grew up on the Redskins. I grew up on ACC basketball. And you knew that the SEC was there, but the SEC wasn't as big as it is now. But I got here in 2002 when I got someone suggested this paper in Albany, Georgia is looking for a sports writer. And at the time I was working for the Washington Post, where I was a glorified, like, you know, get coffee for people. I once literally did get coffee for the sports editor. It might have been when Warren Buffett was in his office. I might be conflating that story with another thing, but I got to do some neat stuff. Like, I was there the first day that Pardon the Eruption ran. And Kornheiser and Wilbon came back to the office, and they asked a bunch of us, me included, like, how'd you think the show went? And we're like, oh, that was actually pretty good. Because I think everybody was expecting this show was going to be on the air for 3 weeks and get canceled. And then we saw it, and we're all like, this is pretty good. I covered like George Mason before they went to the Final Four. I got to do some things here and there. But when I got this opportunity to go to Albany, and I got the job over the phone, no one had the budget to fly me all the way down there. I went into the sports editor's office and I said, should I do this? And in reality, what I was hoping he would say, no, you don't want to go to Little Albany, Georgia. Stay here and you will eventually get promoted to a full-time staff position at the Washington Post. Instead, he said, oh, you got to go. And I'm like, oh, I do. And so I did. And that was my first real job in the South. And the sports editor at the Albany Herald was Daniel Shirley. He was the one who gave me my first job. And 21 years later at the Athletic, my editor is Daniel Shirley. just kind of happened that way. But yeah, that was how, sorry, it's your show.
I came
to the Deep South and I'm still here. We must have
just drank on this show.
speaking of which.
No, that's exactly what we're getting into. When we had Staples on here, I mean, we're just halfway through the weight loss journey at this point. I mean, like we're just getting like halfway through how he dropped like 60 pounds, you know? So,
Andy looks great. He's unrecognizable.
Yeah, super proud of him.
I will say, Seth, everybody can tell you're not from the Deep South because you said your first job was at the Albany.
I knew all about Albany and Albany and Albany. Yeah.
Benny, yeah.
Albany.
No, I'm curious. I'm curious that you mentioned your father being a diplomat and this world travel. You know, what were some of the countries you got to hit? And did you have like a favorite? I mean, is there one you've like since returned to and because you loved it back then?
Well, the most recent was Peru when I was in high school. When I was there was in the middle of the Gulf War, the first Persian Gulf War, and there was terrorism at the time in Peru. So they were going after Americans. So we had to get the hell out of there at one point. Gulf War ended, we came back, and then we left after a year again. So that was interesting because we had bombs going off around us. Spain, I was very young. It's where my sister was born, but we were only there for 2 years. It was like it was 2 years before first grade. And so I don't have many memories of it. Ecuador was first, second, third grade. And I have good memories of that. You know, the Galapagos is really pretty. I recommend that to anybody if you can do it. And they've got volcanoes. That was a cool place.
Yeah. That's always something that, I've always been interested in that for you because I've always wanted to, I mean, even just living different places in the United States. Like I've lived in Georgia my entire life and that's great. And I'm glad. And I feel like I've been to a lot of states. I've seen some stuff. It's been fun. I'm not, there are some people that, rarely get out of their city limits. But the whole idea of like living abroad, actually living abroad while you're a kid, I think is, super intriguing. And I've always been interested in some of the stuff you've had to, say about that. And I wanted to ask you though, getting back to kind of the sports writing journey. What sport was it? Was it baseball? Because I know you're a big baseball guy. Was it baseball that was like, hey, I want to write about this. This is why I want to write about sports.
I think it was basically any sport that would make me successful. I've always been ambitious. But I kind of thought basketball would be it because at Maryland, it was college basketball. Now, there was college football to cover, too, and they cared about it a little bit. But they care about college football at Maryland the way they care about college basketball at Georgia. You can get that idea. You're not going to really make a career out of that. I mean, I've always loved baseball, but I think everyone who's ever covered baseball for a little bit knows what a grind that is. You've got to have a special kind of DNA to be able to do that and all the travel with a family. I mean, the thing with having a family wasn't something I really had a concept of really either. Covering football as a beat writer, that's probably of the sports, it's probably the best one. Because as much travel as we do that we don't like, it's still like weekends and there's still less.
Yeah. Well, I know something we probably all three have in common or have had in common at some point. How long did it take for Athens to get its hooks in you?
I'll say this. So when I was in Albany, I went to Athens a little bit. My coworker, when I first got to Albany, was a guy, I don't know if you've ever heard this name, but Gentry Estes, who was a very cynical mofo at 22 years old. He's actually less cynical now. But he had gone to Athens. He had just graduated. So he was, Gentry and I developed a rivalry. Like we didn't like each other probably for that first year and a half that we worked together in Albany. I mean, sometimes we went out drinking together and, we went out drinking on the town in New Orleans one night.
You don't have to like somebody to drink with
us. Yeah. So he would talk up Athens, and I think I kind of resisted it for that reason. And so I went from the Albany Herald to the state newspaper, and first to cover high schools and then 4 years covering basketball and football for the Gamecocks of the Gamecocks. And then summer 2010, I was just ready to get out of Columbia. Just it wasn't working for me. Covering South Carolina was just not, I wasn't happy. I had been dumped by my girlfriend and I was ready to get out. And so I, I took the job. Daniel, by this point, was now the sports editor at Macon Telegraph. I took the job with him. And it was honestly, it was at best a lateral move. Like the state newspaper was bigger than Macon. Macon and Columbus were kind of together, and I was going to be covered for both of them. So you put their circulation together, it was equal. But honestly, a lot of people were like, why is he doing that? Well, I remember distinctly the first day that I'd moved in, getting situated, and I go to Broad Street, and I stopped somewhere to have a drink. It might have just even been a coffee. And it was in the afternoon, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking up and down Broad Street, and it just felt right. It just felt – for the first time, and it seemed like forever, I just was level, you know, in the best way. And it was like, this is home. I felt like I was home. I felt like it. And honestly, ever since then, I've just been Athens' biggest advocate. I tell everyone how great a town it is.
Yeah.
And the general area, Watkinsville, Statham, Winder, Bogart. It's just a wonderful place.
I appreciate that you caged that with, I had a drink on Broad Street. It might have even been a coffee. Who knows?
I don't know. This is not coffee, but I'm just trying to. I'm trying to dispel any ideas.
No, sure.
it's like it's almost like my granddad used to say. He's like, "Hey, man, every man needs a nap, even if it's only for 2 or 3 hours." you know, it's kind of like, you know.
so you're a big Athens lover, Seth. I mean, so I'm curious. You know, where are you?
I spots? Love like, Athens. I'm not an Athens. I'm not a lover residing in Athens.
No, sure. Where are your spots in Athens though? Like, where do you love? What are the what's the Seth Emerson tour? If I come to you and I say, hey, take me around town, where are you taking me?
God. I mean, Cali and Tito's, it's kind of a lazy choice, but it's right across the street from the Butts Mare. Yeah. Like, where do I always go? I met my wife. We had our first date at the Globe. And so that is that's a definite spot. But for the most part, I would, on my typical Athens evening or to show someone around for the first time, I would just say, let's go find a parking space somewhere near downtown and let's just walk.
Yeah,
you'll find, you know, maybe you'll end up inside Beauregard's. Maybe you'll end up, you know, trying to find wherever the 40 watt is these days. Maybe you try and find all these restaurants. I mean, some of the best restaurants that I've been to are no more. The place, or Five Star Day became the place. Awesome. I remember, what was it? Farm
255.
Farm 255. I wanted to say Farm 441, which now still exists. It's out here.
Well, now the same folks that did that do Farm Burger, which is over there off Prince, and that's a pretty good little meal there too. The one thing I'll say about Athens, Seth, and I think this is why you're kind of, you know, why you were kind of, you know, searching for exactly what to put your finger on is what I've always told people is like I've been to Normal Bar, Max Canada. Little Kings, you know, all good, whatever. I've never really been anywhere that I'm like, I'm not going back. I'm not going to do that again. Cutters. I mean, even these places with crappy reputations that you're not even a huge fan of, almost all of them I've had a good time in at some point. Doesn't mean I love them or I'm going to frequent them or they're going to be my spot. But I mean, all up and down Washington Street and all up and down Clayton Street and up and down Hancock and even into Normal Town and the Bottle Works and everything like that. I've had a good time.
Normal Town has really, I don't know what Normal Town was like before I moved, but it's really, my wife works at the Old Navy campus, which is now the Health Sciences campus. So she goes to lunch there a lot. And Normal Town has a great little group of restaurants, including Viva, the Argentinian restaurant, which was actually originally out on the east side when my wife and I first met and were living there. And it was in that little strip mall with Mama Sid's. Mama Sid's is another one. like my son is a big pizza guy and that's his birthday wish to go to Mama Sid's. And I say, we don't have to make that a special occasion. We can go anytime.
Well, Normal Town is what it is now because of the infusion of cash Jake Roos put in it.
Oh, buddy,
good job, Jake. Yeah.
I put a lot of kids through college in Normal Town. There's no question about it. Between Normal Bar and High, I think I may everything, every improvement High Low may have made, I think I paid for. So.
Yeah, every piece of crown molding or you know, every new toilet fixture they put in that place, Jake Roos paid for it. So.
Is Marty's at Midday still
there? Well, as far as I know.
It's been a while since I've been
Ike and Jane's is the one that closed, right?
Ike and Jane was closed.
I don't go to Marty's at Midday very much, but I interviewed Trey Battle there for a story I did on him, not to bring everything down, but after Quentin Moses died – I was given the tip that he knew, he was roommates at different times with Quentin Moses and Paul Oliver. And so I went and did an interview with him. And I think everyone has probably at this point heard the story of after Paul Oliver died, Mark Richt going to Trey Battle going over to Mark Richt's house because he was just on the ledge, suicidal, basically. And Trey told me that story for the first time before he told it anywhere publicly at Marty's at Midday. And that was one of the few times in my life as a reporter that like I literally had a chill go through.
Yeah.
Because Mark Richt had originally told me when I did the Paul Oliver story, it was like 2014, he told me the story about someone, a player who he wouldn't name, coming over to his house and having to talk to him in the aftermath of Paul Oliver's suicide about all these things and talking him through it. But understandably, he didn't name the player. I used the story in my story, but I'm sitting there at Marty's at Midday talking to Trey Battle, and he starts telling me the story independently. I don't think he had read the story I'd written like 3 years before. And I realize you have that hallelujah, eureka moment of, my God, it was him. It was him. And so that may have been the only time in my career I've had a literal, that's why the expression, a chill goes through you.
Yeah.
Chill goes through your spine exists is like, oh my God. Anyway, that's just a little tangent as we were talking about.
No, that's the kind of stuff that happens to a good reporter. And I remember that story.
And me.
and I remember that story was, you might not remember this, but that was probably my first interaction with you. I mean, I'd seen you up at Georgia and stuff. Gentry was covering the team for 24/7. You and I hadn't had really interaction. And then you wrote that story which was something prepared for the dream for when the dream ends or something like that. It was, I can't remember the exact wording of it, but you had written that story and I read it and I DM'd you on Twitter and I was like, man, that was a really moving story. You did a great job with it. And you were really appreciative of it. And then, Gentry moves on. And I think he was like, hey, keep an eye on this kid. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. And you did kind of show me the ropes there a little bit early on. And we've been,
showing the ropes. You've made a great transition from and I know you went to J school at UG.
I did not.
You didn't go to J school?
No, I went to course. I was in school for it. I went. I was in education. Yeah, I was in education. I wanted to go to J school bad, but as soon as I got into Grady, I found out I was going to be a dad. So
That's why I was mixing up. But your instincts are so good. You made me think you went to J school. But you made such a transition from, and you didn't want to do that. They took you as the recruiting writer and made you the team writer. And you're like, man. And at first everyone's like, well, this isn't going to last long, but it was kind of obvious right away.
I was one of those people.
You knew what you were doing. In 2015, after Gentry had left, or those first few weeks or months, to think that you'd be here 8 years later, still covering the team the way you are, breaking stories, the insight that you have as a writer on the team. But you did it really seamlessly. It's not like I was sitting there telling you how to write a story. You knew it on your own.
It was kind of about the protocol, I think. And I don't know. I had struggled so much there when I first came over to 24/7 because I didn't really have a role. I was kind of the tweener guy, just trying to figure out, hey, what do y'all want me to do? You want me to do recruiting? You want me to help Rusty? You want me to help Gentry? What do you want me to do? And it ended up working out pretty well. Pretty fun. Let me ask you this. All right, we've traveled some places. We've covered some stuff for Georgia over the years. As a Georgia beat writer, what's the place you got to go back? Like the place we've been that you just really want to go back again?
City or restaurant?
Yeah, city, or event, whatever.
Brothel or God. You know, I think about this a lot because with the SEC scheduling format changing, when I first got over the surprise that Georgia was getting Kentucky instead of South Carolina as the permanent opponent, annual opponent, in the new format, and chasing that down, then the second, like a few minutes after that, you're like, wait a minute, this means Keeneland every other year. And that, you know, I lived in South Carolina, like we said, for 5 years, and I think Columbia sometimes gets a bad rap, but it's Keeneland in October versus Columbia in September. Not even close. Now, I don't know for sure. Like, no one's told me when the dates are going to be for when Georgia goes to Kentucky, but that's a place you want to go. You know, going to LA, I mean, I'm glad we went to Malibu that afternoon, Jake, but man, the weather for the Rose Bowl week was so much better than the weather for the national championship week. I would have liked to have hit up a few more spots, Venice Beach there.
Los Angeles is a lot less charming when the weather's bad.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to make that drive where you got the mountains on your right and the ocean on your left, and you realize why houses here cost millions of dollars. But it was like Disneyland when we covered the Rose Bowl. That was a great little excursion, especially when they took us to the area that had the, you know, that we did the interviews at the canyon backdrop for the movie Cars. And at that time, my son was 4 years old and really into cars. So that was cool. But it's just being able to do stuff like that where you're doing it, where you're kind of along for the ride. Like there's a lot to complain about in sports writing, and God knows I complain about it. But when I, you know, for one thing, we are privileged to be able to go to a lot of these places where our companies are footing the bill. But when we complain about it, you guys know this, but sometimes maybe we don't do a good job of explaining it well. When we complain about stuff like access or things happening to us when we're on the road and et cetera, it's because we want to do a good job.
Yeah.
And you can't do a good job under certain conditions. And so we complain about that, but sometimes we don't do a good job of explaining that's what the motivation is.
Seth, I wanted to ask you, one of the things I've always appreciated about what you do is I think you're one of the best long form guys on our beat. And you mentioned the Trey Battle story, and you mentioned Mark Richt as well. I'm curious, you know, what are some of the other standouts for you? You know, things that you look back on and you say, hey, that's a piece that, I was really proud of. Because honestly, I'm probably going to go Google it after we're done.
Yeah. I mean, Trey Battle, that story actually is still up here in my office. I've got the AJC story because they took that and put it on their in their sports section, like gave it the whole page treatment. I thought that was I did a good job on that. But honestly, the reason I did a good job on that was because Trey Battle did a good job of sharing his story. The story I did on Stetson for him being the college football man of the year for The Athletic in December. I liked that story a lot, but it was a good story because his mother and father separately, obviously, told me a lot of really cool stuff. And it's a matter of a lot of times of just not screwing it up or taking the time to form it all together. I've got a lot of stories on my docket right now that it's like, I'm going to do this story and that story and that story. And hopefully they all come together and I'm, that's what I'm excited about. I don't think anyone would ever buy a book of my like best of stories, but I still think my maybe the favorite thing I've written was a like 500 word column I did for Albany to begin the college or begin the Major League Baseball season, where I imagined a conversation between George Will, the Swedish chef, and Foghorn Leghorn. And it was just George Will talking about the pageantry of spring and the smell of the diamond, and Swedish chef doing his and Foghorn Leghorn doing and I don't remember much about it, but it was.
Well, one story that I don't know that you've written, but I.
Oh, he wrote about it. He wrote.
I mean, you were close. You were close by for. I don't know that I caught your column on it. Oh, Bevo.
Yeah. Well, I wrote it. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I believe the word you used was harrowing, my harrowing account of Bevo.
Was it? Yeah.
I don't know that I caught your column, but I'm interested to hear it from the firsthand account.
Well, I mean, Jake and I were both next to each other, and that was, I don't know, looking at the video.
Yeah, we're down there to the bottom left right there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, down there. What I obviously back away, but I don't jump. Some people have said that I really jumped, and I'm like, I don't think I did that.
No, it was more of a, it was more of like a, all right, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
I don't need this cow.
Well, but we were, and you can't even tell from like from the video, but I remember is all of a sudden seeing Bevo come towards us, and like we talk about why phrases exist, like life flashing before my eyes, you know. Yeah. Like you're like, you just kind of get this, oh, like this is bad, and you pull away. And then like 30 seconds later, you're kind of like, all right, everything's in order, and you look over there and Matthew McConaughey is just kind of looking over, and I'm like, well, come on, why didn't you do anything? But yeah, that was, I think I wrote a better story than I did told the account of it just now. But yeah, that was something. We don't remember too much about the actual game, but yeah, just
I really don't. And every time I watch that, Seth, I look at that lady that's in the flats with the black outfit on, and I think, God, how lucky is she that she didn't end up with some sort of permanent damage, because she had her back turned to Bevo. And you know, I've said it over and over again, if that dude right there wanted to be at midfield, he was going to get to midfield, and nobody was going to stop him.
Yeah,
this lady down here to the left that's getting up right there right now, she narrowly avoided it. Let me ask you this: which one will you always remember? Will you remember the George Pickens JT Daniels stakeout, or will you remember Bevo? Oh,
the Pickens Daniels stakeout, because it lasted so long and it had so many twists and turns.
Oh my God!
Have you told the story on the show?
Somewhat, you know. I mean, long story short, we were at George's hotel basically all day long. I chased an iguana. You know, yes. I got mad and decided we were going to go out to the practice field. I drove. I went and looked through the fence. Security almost got me.
This was the day they told us we couldn't see practice after we had pretty much come to Miami for the week, because we were told
just
we would
to
get
see two practices. You know, just to see 15 minute sessions of practice, and we staked it out all day long. Seth had gotten a tip while we were all together that there was a plane.
We had given up at that point. Yeah, the team had come in the buses.
We were going back.
We were headed back, and I remember I was in the passenger seat. I think you were driving.
Yeah,
and a couple guys were in the back, and I got the tip. JT Daniels and George Pickens just took off from Athens. And I'm like, look, I know that there's competition among reporters, but we're all in this together at this point. And so I turned, I announced to the car, I got this tip. Mm-hmm. And so we're all like, we think about it and we decide, what are we going to do? And so we split up. Anthony Dasher and I go to the airport. And long story short, we got made. the Georgia people, and this was at the private terminal, very small terminal, and Anthony and I took an Uber there, and we got made like right away by the Georgia people. And so they figured out a way to get them around us. And they thought they had beaten us. And then George Pickens just Instagrams a picture of himself at the airport.
Yeah, just completely foiled it. We were waiting. Palmer and I were waiting right there at the Georgia hotel. And we thought we saw him a couple. We thought we saw JT Daniels a couple times. And the funny thing is we're waiting there on a backup quarterback and a receiver that has like, you know, three catches on the year at that point. But we're sitting there waiting on it. And then, you know, we give up. And then right as we're about to get in the car, I crank up the car, we're about to go back. Cause one of the things that sucks about Miami is the fact that, or the Orange Bowl, is we're staying in Dania Beach, which is a good 30 minutes away from where Georgia's hotel is.
We're literally across the street from the Fort Lauderdale airport.
Yeah. And we're getting ready to go back. And I mean, I'm starving. I'm thirsty. You know, I'm just ready to be done for the day. And then George Pickens tweets that. And, you know, at some point, and Seth, you know this, Roosh, you know this, sometimes, you know, you talk to people, you ask your sources things, and you don't hear a whole lot. But then you screenshot of, you know, something that, you know, screenshot something like that and say, oh, so they are here. And then it's, yep, they're there. And I'm like, okay, well, this would have been great to know about an hour ago, dude.
We put in all that work that day, all that time, and battled with the UGA people trying to hide their presence from us. And by the way, like, they were cool about it. Like, we laughed about it later. Like, we laughed about it
at the national championship game.
Yeah. Yeah. They were like, they said the same thing. They were like, you know, we didn't blame you guys. We knew you were doing your jobs, but we were trying to hide that they were coming. So we hid them. And then George just took a picture of it and he blew it. We're like, oh. Anyway, we spent all 8 hours. Like, I think that's about what it was, like 8 hours. And I had a story like that where when I was working at the AJC, Kirby had just been hired at the Gator Bowl. He and I had seen, I'm sitting there in the lobby of the team hotel, and I see Kirby and Jim Chaney come in to do interviews. And so I text Chip, and I'm like, Kirby's here. He went in this office. And so Chip comes downstairs, and he takes like one side of the room. I take another side of the room, and we stake them out for like 4 or 5 hours. And at some point, Kirby, that sneaky mofo, got out of that room without us realizing it. I don't know. I had two conversations during that 4 or 5 hour stretch. It was one, Lauren Smith came over and sat down and talked to me. Another, Josh Lee brought his kids over. And I'm pretty sure that Josh was acting as the, you know,
the buffer.
And that's when Kirby got out of there. So I wasted like 4 or 5 hours of my life. And then I give up. And so I get an ice cream or a piece of cake from the pantry there. And I go back to at the resort, my room. And who's standing out in the parking lot, like perfectly, like almost right before my room, but Kirby. And somebody, I don't know who he was. And I'm like, hey. And he's like, oh, hey. And we had a brief conversation there. And that was all to confirm that James Coley was interviewing, because I had spotted someone who looked like James Coley walking in. But we wanted to know who was in the room. And there's all this effort that goes into reporting sometimes. And to get back to the George Pickens story, we spent five of us. This is Dasher, you, me, Palmer, Weiser. I think we all kind of were together teaming up. We spent all that those man hours working on that, and the story is acquired by George Pickens just tweeting out the picture himself.
Wait, so the James Coley thing that happened in Miami?
That was Jacksonville.
I was gonna say there's a lot of guys who look like James Coley walking around Miami.
Yeah. James Speedboat Coley, baby.
I can understand how that could have happened.
One of my favorite things about that whole Miami thing is I have some best of Mark Weiser moments from that. Just some of his quips and some of his I'm done, saying he's going to do things and then not doing them. Love him to death. He's hilarious. But you know, you spend that much time around Weiser, you get to hear some waffling back and forth. I'm so questioning why he's doing what he's doing, and stuff like that. Listen, Seth, we each have a question we ask everybody before they go, and Roosh usually goes first, but I'll go first this time. Mine's kind of morbid. Listen, you've put yourself in this situation. You've been found face down in a ravine, and you're dead. But you're also standing there over your own body, and you get to kind of control what happens after that. After solving your own murder, who are you getting to kind of perform at your funeral?
Who am I getting to perform?
It can be a poem. It can be a comedy act. It can be music. Whatever you want. Who is sending Seth Emerson off into the next dimension?
The first thing I thought of would be like Garth, the dance, but that might be a little too sad. I want people to have fun and drink at my funeral, so maybe I have them do Friends in Little Places instead. Maybe a comedian. I mean, Jim Gaffigan might be my favorite at this point of those who are alive. It's like you got someone like Mitch Hedberg who. My favorite. Yeah. Like, yeah, I used to do drugs. I still do, but I also used to.
That moment's going to be clipped, just so you're aware. That's going to be on Twitter.
Okay.
And people are going to respond.
They think it's me.
Put out with just you saying that.
So. I will confess, like, to counteract the idea that I'm an alcoholic talking about drinking, whatever, is I may be the only person, and I think my wife is in this category. I've never actually done any drugs. I've never even smoked pot. I'm very lame.
We won't get into that here.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll go ahead and say right now, I cannot make the same claim.
Okay. I guess I would say that, you know what, but once I get off the air, I'm going to realize, oh, I should have said this guy, you know, or this person would be. But that's the first thing, at least, that jumped into my mind.
Well, we'll have you back so you can answer it again. Awesome. Second time. My question for everybody is, and because, you know, we get people from journalism, we've got former players, et cetera. The worst hotel room you've ever stayed in.
Wow. You know, at the Peach Bowl this year, the room was okay, but they didn't clean it.
Yeah.
Like, they went, like, it was clean. We were there like a week, and it got clean once.
Seth, the Westin kind of sucks. Let's just be honest. The Westin kind of sucks now.
Okay.
I've stayed in Holiday Inns better.
Yeah, so my room stunk literally because like I had sweaty clothes from my work. I mean, I was there, I was working out. And that's the thing is it's cold, so you're doing all your workouts in the gym, thinking I'll be able to. My room will be cleaned. I'll be able to throw them in this little, bag or whatever. And instead, nothing gets cleaned. My bed sheets are that. I mean, there's been some bad rooms, but like, I don't know. I kind of have good memories of bad hotels. I don't get any Marriott points by staying at cheap, when you're traveling on your own dime and your family is, you just need to stop. And it's like, we need a hotel where the dog can stay. And we're just going to stop here and sleep. My wife and I had this a few weeks ago when we were traveling up to Virginia for a funeral and motels, for some reason, I have good memories of them. I have good memories of my dad and I when I was a teenager staying in a motel in Mississippi on the way to back from something I like those. It's when you have expectations for something like a Westin in Atlanta for the Peach Bowl, which I not casting aspersions on the Peach Bowl. The Peach Bowl was first class this year. Everything was great. The Access, Matt Garvey and company, Gary Stokin gave a long speech at the press conference, but other than that, they were first class and did a great job. Westin wasn't as great.
I gotta say, a good title for a travel memoir would be "I have good memories of bad hotels."
That's
a really good title to a travel memoir.
Yeah, and it's and motels are Americana. They really are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the weird things. Like, I grew up as a kid. My dad and my mom were divorced. And so my dad would, like, come hang out with me for the weekend. And we stayed in a lot of motels in my hometown.
Yeah.
And so, rough places. But, it's a cool thing. And it's kind of dying out. I kind of hate that to some degree.
And when you watch Schitt's Creek, yeah, I see their rooms. And I'm like, I know what those rooms look like. And yeah, I'm actually like, oh, they got a kitchenette in there? That's pretty good.
I've only ever stayed in a motel, I guess is what that would technically be.
Door is on the outside in a motel.
Yeah. Yes. I've only stayed at one time, and it was in a place called Rockland, Maine in 2003. My dad and I were working. My dad's a contractor. We had contracts up and down the East Coast, Walmart pharmacies. We visited Easton, Maryland. Where, you know, you have family.
Where my grandmother lives. I was there 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Spent some time growing up. It's a beautiful place. But yep. Rockland was as well, but they didn't have, it wasn't like they had a Marriott or a Hampton Inn. It was, it was this motel, this little mom and pop deal. And it wasn't the cleanest thing, but it also wasn't super dirty. It was just kind of old. And, we just kind of sat in chairs out front and, talked to everybody who came by and drank beer and, you know, that kind of thing. It was a good time. So, that's probably my only memory of a motel. Otherwise I've stayed in a bunch of hotels, and I've stayed some bad ones, and I've stayed at a lot of good ones too. So.
Yeah. It's more about not even the state of the room. I never need much from the room itself. It's more like, do you have to trudge up a certain amount of stairs? Is it like the elevator, you know, is it, the worst is like, do you need to use your hotel key to activate inside the elevator your ability to get up to your floor? And you never remember, your hotel key is always in your back pocket. You're carrying 5,000 yes. things and you never get to it. Someone else is in the hotel or is in the elevator already, so you got to ask them, I'm on 15. You know, sorry.
Yeah.
It's stuff
that's
like
the thing now, man. That is the thing now. That hotel get to your floor thing.
That makes sense. I mean, I get it.
It makes sense, but man, it is the thing now, dude. It is everywhere all the time. And if you haven't done it, I mean, you know, went so long without really having to do it, it's taken some time for me to get used to.
Yeah.
So, well, Seth, thanks so much for coming on, man. And we'll have to do it again for sure, because we'll have some more ground to cover here pretty soon.
We didn't even talk about the spring.
I'm so glad we had you on around G-Day so we could talk about G-Day.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool breaking down Carson Beck and Brock Vandegrift.
Next time we talk, we may be talking about Dylan Raiola winning a Heisman Trophy at Georgia or something. So,
yeah.
Sounds like they may be getting a commitment here, you know, in the not so distant future. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, dude. All right, man. Wait to see you again.
Appreciate it. All right.
Take care. Thanks for having me on.
See you, dude.
That went as expected, man. Great.
Yeah, man. Seth's salt of the earth. He's salt of the earth for sure. I actually hit him up earlier today about, ever since we moved, they haven't had a chance to come out and see the new house. So I hit him up earlier today about getting together and, you know, maybe doing some barbecue and hanging out. His wife's awesome. She's such a, she's a sweetheart. Dr. Kirsten, she's a professor at, she was a professor at UG. I think she may be in research now, but she's like in gerontology. She studies aging and stuff. She's incredibly smart person.
I'd be an interesting case study.
Sorry, you have the innards of a 190-year-old man.
How are you alive, sir?
Hey, that leads me to my question that I'll ask you then, because right. I had two. What's your oldest organ, you think? Like, if they were to tear you apart and they were to say, hey, brother, this looks like the oldest thing in there, the liver?
I think you know the answer without asking that question.
Well, I just think to myself, I wonder when the last time Jake Roos's heart rate got above 120.
Oh, that's not, yeah, sure. Yeah, no, I have a heart of a young man. I'm a chill guy. I mean, I'm pretty nonplussed. I don't get, you know, I deal with anxiety, but like more so it turns into just it manifests into crippling depression rather than like, rather than to the long-term blood pressure problem.
Have you heard that soundbite from Theo Von when he talks about when he was born and the doctors were looking at him? No. He's like, yeah, when I was born, the doctors stood over me and they were like, I think he has, he said, they told me I had the rib, I had the rib cage of a large cat. And the something and something and something else. I mean, oh man, that guy is so random and so funny. But yeah, so your oldest organ would definitely, outside of your liver, what are we talking about? Pancreas? We need a new pancreas.
That's where the next thing. I mean, that's where it all goes. If we're just tracking how alcohol affects the system, yes, pancreas. I probably haven't been kind to my lungs over the years. I've smoked my fair share of cigarettes, babes, etc. I don't know, man. What did they say? The outside looks good. The pews are rotten on the inside. Yeah. Yes, kind of thing.
The bones are bad, brother.
Yeah, it's expect it when it comes. I guess is what I would have to say about my lifespan.
By the way, I want to point this out. I had to pull this out of the drawer. I haven't worn this shirt in a while. This is Justified. We dug Cole together. Little Boy Crowder, Raylan Givens here.
I've never watched it.
Incredible dialogue. Timothy Oliphant and Walt Goggins just, you know, tour de force. It's incredible. But seeing it. I keep seeing myself up there on the screen, and I keep seeing Boyd Crowder's hairline, and I'm like, oh man.
Yeah. All right. So mine tonight, for you, because it's not something I feel. I feel like we've talked about this in passing, but I don't know the answer to this question. Who was your dude when it came to wrestling? I know you were a wrestling guy.
Oh, man, this is easy.
I know you were a wrestling guy like I was or am. And, I've always loved wrestling. And I know you were a big wrestling guy, too. Who was your guy, though, man? I mean, when it came to the stars.
I mean, I got to get in line for this, but the Ultimate Warrior was 100%. No kidding. I mean, I wasn't even a big WWF guy, but the Ultimate Warrior was tremendous. When he would get fired up and he would shake the ropes, I don't know, man. I still think about it and I almost get chills thinking about it. I was a big Sting guy. Like if I had to pick one in each federation, it would have been Sting and it would have been Ultimate Warrior, a big face paint guy. But I'll tell you a quick story.
Is it the one?
No. We'll get to that one eventually. I've got a really good story about the Great American Bash in 1992 that we'll get to at some point. But when I was 7 years old, I want to say I was 7 years old, my grandmother owned a flower nursery, red tips, azaleas, stuff like that down in South Georgia. And I used to help her. I would help her during like Christmas break. Thanksgiving break. And it was Thanksgiving break, I believe, when I was in the first or second grade. And she had this big tobacco barn that she would store stuff in. And there was a loft in that tobacco barn with a hole in the floor so things could be dropped in. And I was carrying these boxes that, you know, she would use to put red tips in, put them in a van and haul them different places. And long story short, I stepped off into that hole, about a 12-foot drop. And my brother was down there. He broke my fall, probably saved my life. But when I fell, I tried to catch myself and I broke my wrist. And then when I came down, I hit my head on the wood going in, and it took a big like chunk of, like it took like scraped a bunch of skin off my forehead. And then I fell and I hit my head on the actual pavement a little bit. It didn't like smash it, but so I had a concussion, whatever, spent some time in the hospital.
Whatever.
So on the way home from the hospital, you know, it was when I don't know if anybody had them, the wrestling buddies.
I have two in my mom's basement right this second, a Hulk Hogan and a Macho Man.
Yeah. So on the way home from the hospital, my mom and dad stopped at Walmart, and my dad ran in and he got me an Ultimate Warrior wrestling buddy. And they didn't show me until I got home. And dude, I was I don't know if I was milking it or what, but I was just kind of like, I'm at the hospital, and my dad showed me that thing, dude. I was elbow dropping that. I mean, in 10 minutes, I was power bombing that thing on my bed with a cast on my wrist in 10 minutes, dude. It was, I was a new man as soon as I got that Ultimate Warrior Wrestling Buddy. I had all the action figures and everything like that. The Ultimate Warrior was 100% my guy.
Very vividly, I remember my mom came home, she'd gone shopping, and I was staying at my grandparents while she went shopping, and she came in to talk to them, and I ran out to the car, and I opened the back of the car, and I'm like searching through her bags, and I found all these wrestling toys, and it was right around Christmas, and it was like Razor Ramon, and it was all my dudes, man. I mean, I was just with it all. Yeah. And I remember I found them all, and I was like, are those for me? And they were Christmas gifts. And she was like, I'm taking them all back. And I was devastated, dude. Oh, Robin's, what a horrible thing to pull on a child.
But, yeah.
But I did get them all for Christmas. Shout out to my mom. She's 100, man. But yeah, I know, like I said, I'm kind of surprised by the Warrior thing. I didn't know that about you, man.
I was a big Ultimate Warrior guy. I loved him.
I figured you were more of a – I didn't know that you were a face paint guy, man. I thought I've seen you like a Hogan dude or whatever. But
I also loved a lot of B-list guys, like British Bulldog.
God, absolutely.
I was a big British Bulldog guy. Ahmed Johnson back in the day.
Yes. What that slam, brother?
Tatanka
was great.
Yeah, Tatanka was great.
I was a huge Steiner Brothers fan, and then I became a big Papa Pump fan because he just went crazy. It just was like my whole character is I'm an insane person now. So I get it.
Well, I'll say this too. One time we were at church whenever I was a kid. I was probably like 8 or 9 years old. Me and my dad were like, roughing each other up or something. And we're like in the social hall, like after everything was over, we're cleaning up and we got to, goofing off. And I started acting like one of the bushwhackers. And my dad had just gotten like a crew cut. And I'm over there doing like this for here. And my dad did something. I took his hat off and grabbed his head and started licking the top of his head. And my mom, dude, I thought my mom, like all the blood ran out of her face. She turned so white. She was so embarrassed. She really wanted to disown me.
There's nothing better though. I will say, like, as a child, and I don't have children, and I don't watch children, so keep me off of any lists that you have. but like as a kid, man, some of my fondest memories were trampoline wrestling.
Oh yeah,
just outstanding.
I've been drop kicked off more trampolines.
I got fisherman hook suplex through a trampoline that had it was missing like 6 springs. I went through that hole. I hit the bottom rail, man. It was like hardcore wrestling with a little bit of je ne sais quoi for the fisherman's hook suplex. Shout out to my man Kurt Hinn.
All right, well, let's let these people go because otherwise we could go for another hour and we're working on our longest show yet.
We got to do a wrestling show.
Yeah, we're gonna do a wrestling show. It'd be nice if we could get somebody on. Honestly,
if anybody has connections,
I mean, we did see Ric Flair that time in the Blind Pig and talk to him a little bit.
He wouldn't
pose for a photo with us. I did end up getting one later at Georgia, but he wouldn't pose one for us because he was in a bar and he said his publicist would kill him.
Yeah.
If he got another picture in a bar. But hey, listen. It's been Bark After Dark. It's a lot of fun. Thanks to Seth Emerson for coming on. We don't know what we're doing next week. We may do nothing. Who knows? You're along for the ride with us, and we don't know what's going on either. So, but we love you guys. Thank you so much for jumping in, and we'll see you guys on Wednesday with the Georgia show, where we may have a little commitment news to talk about. Who knows? See y'all later.